We've got a special guest in the studio today, Donna Jones, MBE, who's a spoken word poet, an artist, and a charity fundraiser, among many, many other things. And we're just going to take some time out now and have a chat, Donna and I.
Hello.
Hello. Now then, Donna, for those people who don't know you, and I know you've only been on the Isle of Wight for a year, so there might be quite a few, could you explain where you come from and when you moved to the Isle of Wight? Just give us a potted history of yourself.
Well, if I talk to them like this, Kevin, they might get an idea. Obviously, I was born in Barnsley.
Yeah.
And somebody once said, if the world had got piles, that's where it would be. How very rude.
Oh, it is rude. Barnsley is lovely at certain times of year.
And then I moved to Sheffield and lived in Sheffield for 35 years.
A big city.
A big city. And I tell you what, I've just been in the Key Arts, and within the space of 20 minutes whilst I was waiting to come here, I met six people that I knew. That's incredible.
You're joking.
So honestly, you get to know people on the island so quickly.
Yes, you do.
You really do.
Okay. And what brought you to the island?
Family.
Yeah.
And I'd retired from youth work after 35 years, and it was very, very difficult towards the end, because I started working voluntary with young women that had been sexually trafficked from abroad.
Yeah.
And so I decided that now was a bit of me time. And so I came to the island for a holiday and never went back.
Okay.
How good is that?
That's amazing. And you are an MBE. Is that because of the youth work you did?
It is. I worked for Sheffield Youth Service, but running alongside that, I set up a charity called the Manor Young People's Health Project. So I think it was a combination of those two together. And I didn't realise, actually, how long it takes for somebody to be nominated for an MBE.
Yeah.
It takes 2 years.
Wow.
And it's not the Queen, obviously. She doesn't know me. Well, I don't think she knows me yet. But having said that, you have to have something like 12 references.
12?
About 12 references to make sure that you are who you are and, you know,
Yeah, but you've devoted a considerable amount of your life then to the youth work, haven't you?
I have.
We'll talk about the art a bit later. And I know from reading up on you that you've dealt with some really tough issues in your time. Could you just give us a flavour of the sort of work you were doing when you were in Sheffield?
People say to me, what do you do? What's youth work? Is it table tennis? Is it snooker? I think that's the old misconception. I mean, they are tools by which we get to know young people. And I used to say to them, well, it's the A to Z. What do you mean by that? And I'd say, well, we're the Heineken team. We go into places that maybe other people daren't go into, and I'm not exaggerating.
Yeah.
And we've got relationships with young people and families that, you know, they're very suspicious of authority or anybody in authority. And the beauty was that I had a team of workers where I recruited and trained local people. So they already knew the score, and they got a lot of respect in the community, so that made it a lot easier for me. And what happened was, we'd say, right, you know, the A to Z, you're the frontliners, you're the first port of call for a lot of these young people and their families. So it may be, take for A, it may be around alcohol abuse, it may be around abuse, accommodation. Suddenly a young person's being made homeless because they've been made to stay at home a lot longer than they normally would now. They can't get jobs, etc. B might be benefits, might be bullying.
Yeah.
D might be domestic violence.
Yes.
So whatever those young people present is what we will try and support them around, but then we go on to other agencies and get support longer term.
Okay. And how did you get into that field of work? Was that right from an early age yourself?
Yeah, it's fascinating how it happened. My mum suffered from mental health problems, bless her, and she had severe clinical depression, which led to her being in and out of psychiatric hospital. Now, at that time, there were no such things as teaching mentors or, you know, people at school that you could confide in. You just got on with it, basically. And obviously, there was a thing at that time where you didn't tell anybody. You kept everything within the family. Tell nobody out. That's what we used to be told. And the school that I went to was seen, would now be seen as a failing school. But they recruited, I understand, headhunted this guy called Jack Lavelle. And he was amazing. He was only about 5'2", but he was very dapper. And he'd been in the RAF. And they brought him in to try and, you know, sort this school out. And he introduced, believe it or not, O-levels. And there were no A-levels. We had to move to a different school for that. And there was only two of us that went on to do A-levels at grammar school. So that says a lot. And Jack introduced the Duke of Edinburgh's award. Now, combined with the teachers who connected with you, they weren't just there teaching their subject, they were interested in the whole person. These teachers got involved in the Duke of Edinburgh's award, and it's only years later that I realised the impact that that had. It's a bit like the Challenging and Adventure project on the island.
Yes.
And it was all about something outside of academics, and it taught us social skills. It, you know, we got to know the Derbyshire countryside through camping and walking, and it was fabulous, absolute, and that stuck with me. And when I trained as a teacher, I realised actually I wanted to work with young people, but not necessarily in a classroom. So I, at that time, my qualification enabled me to go into youth work, and that's what I did.
Right.
I wanted to work with young people like I'd been worked with through the Duke of Edinburgh's award, but it was seen as social education, and that's what I did. And I worked with young people on the streets of Sheffield, worked with young people at risk, you name it. As I've said, you know, the Heineken team.
Yes. Oh wow, what a story. And you eventually, your reward after all those years was the MBE, was it?
It was. And but, I mean, a bigger reward was obviously seeing how young people, you know, developed. I mean, there were some kids that I worked with that would have been so easily to have got them involved in crime. Yeah. They walked that tightrope. It was really, like, Shameless.
Yes.
And, you know, through the work that we did, these kids were able to get portfolios that were accredited through ASDAN. I mean, their school portfolios were minimal. You know, it might have got two sheets in it. Yeah. Ours, we recorded, evidenced, and accredited everything that they did. And as a result of that, some of them went on to university.
Fantastic.
Absolutely. And they're now youth workers, community workers, teachers, social workers, you name it. But the MBE, I love this one, because I decided to actually take one of the mums and her child to Buckingham Palace. Now, the mum was an ex-heroin addict, but a fantastic woman. You know, she'd, like, had a real tough life. Her husband had got murdered, and she'd had to, you know, pull it all together. And she'd had this daughter, and she was a heroin baby. So throughout her life, this young woman, who was 11 when I met her, and she's now 22, was a, you know, got ADHD and all the associated problems that come with heroin addiction. But God, she was feisty.
Yeah.
But she was one of these, you know, rough diamonds. She didn't like bullying. She didn't like drugs. And she would stand up for the underdog. And she wasn't scared. She tackled anybody, you know. And people had run. And there was a family that came onto the estate from Burma. They were Burmese Christians, and they'd had to flee, basically. And they were the only family that was actually put onto the estate that I worked on, which was called the Manor Estate in Sheffield. And this young woman took it on upon herself. They came, I think it was like Christmas Eve. She got the clothes together for them. She got toys together for them, and a television, and took them round. And from that day forward, that family were integrated. Nobody dare have a go at them about being from a different culture, a different country. And she supported them. So I thought, right, I'm taking mum and daughter. So they were over the moon about it. Now, mum had got no ID at all. We had to take a photographic ID. And the house that she'd originally been married in, etc., it set it on fire. So there was no birth certificate, there was no passport, there was nothing. So I said to her, excuse me, we need to get photographic evidence. So this is the day before we're due to go down to London. So I said, what are we going to do? I thought, no, you can't panic in front of her, you know, it's not fair. So I said, I'll tell you what we'll do, we'll go down to the police station, get some passport photos, and we'll get the police to sign it. That was on the Monday morning. We were due to go Monday afternoon. First thing she did was she went to the doctors, got the doctor to sign saying, this is who you are. We got outside. I look at the letter and he'd written the wrong surname. Equally, we got no extra passport photographs, so she had to rush back to town to get some more passport photographs. Anyway, we went down to the police station and they couldn't sign it because of what's been happening in terms of terrorism. Yeah. Because they don't know this person, they're not allowed. So we said, oh my goodness, what are we going to do? Anyway, eventually I said to her, right, I said, I will ring St. James's Palace, explain to them at the moment we might not have any ID photographic, and we'll see from there. But bring whatever you've got that's got your name on it. She turned up the next day with a carrier bag. It was hysterical. There was everything in it. There was the rent bill, the gas bill, the electric bill, the water rates bill. And it was just full of all these, you know, yeah, these bills that had got her name on it. But fortunately, she went to the bus station and got a bus pass. And on that was the photographic ID. We get to the get to Buckingham Palace the following morning. She's looking glamorous and all the rest of it. We reach one of the gates, no particular gate. And I'm thinking, please let us through, please let us through. Mm-hmm. And the policeman went, oh, you've got here then, have you? So they'd obviously been pre-warned this person may arrive without any photographic ID. And it was a fabulous experience for them.
It was.
Absolutely fabulous.
Fantastic.
Fantastic.
Yeah, fantastic. Thanks, Donna. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk to Donna about her poetry and her art. And with a bit of luck, Donna might read us her latest poem. But we'll see about that in a minute. Now, we've got a moment of history being made on the Monday Magazine Show, because Donna is going to read us her latest poem, What She Wrote, here on the Isle of Wight, just from observing people. So we're just going to use this link before the next song to hear that poem from Donna. So off you go, Donna.
This poem's called Hobo. Nomad, Bedouin, traveller, migrant, hobo or grafter. Mad, bad or broken. Eyes look at you behind polished glass of neatly packaged tourism. Prints, postcards and pots hang on for the last of autumn's holidaymakers. Yours would make a saleable photograph as long as you stayed outside, kept the smell sealed in between layers of clothes too dirty to wash. You and Red, the dog who put his paw into a tin of red paint. Artistic realism. They measure you by the overflowing plastic bags, not Hermes but food bank offerings, by the dank blanket on a bench no one else wants to share, by the crusted scabs on a face much older than 43, a tired face that cannot sleep under the whip of wind and spray, cannot dream on railway platforms with silent pigeons. Each a dot on a map of bags you have discarded, too heavy to carry. Yours is a history of migration to farms and fields, harvest and hope. I ask you if you've had a good life travelling from the Kent of your childhood, pea and potato picking on neighbours' farms, black soil still coating cracked nails. You shrug your shoulders, a slow rise and fall. The heat of harvest came too early this year, the apples too eager to drop, wasted. Russia did not want them. Laid off 3 weeks too early, you wait skint. Behind your eyes, a faded film reel of journeys play. I think of the dust bowl of America's Midwest, train hopping of mice and men and the blues of poverty and pain. You ran from the slavery of gangs too ruthless to care of your grieving. Crossed Edinburgh, you headed south to the Solent safety. You are the stuff of Johnny Cash, Canterbury Tales and Wandering Minstrels. Your wisdom lies in the crease folds of your face, sandpaper lips and calloused palms that give me 3 packets of cakes. I salute you, John.
Oh, amazing. And what was behind that? Where did that poem come from?
I was on Union Street and I saw John sat on a bench surrounded
in Ryde,
yeah. Surrounded by all his bags and Dot and the dog, and I will always go up and have a chat. The first thing I said to him was, have you eaten today?
Yeah.
And he said yes, and he showed me the bags of things that people had donated to him, and he said people have been so generous, and he'd also been to the food bank. And I touched his blanket, and it was wet, because obviously it had been raining very heavy. And I said to him, where did you sleep last night? And he said, under the promenade. He said you can only really stay at friends' houses for 2 nights. He said because then it's too much, you know.
Yeah.
He said, but because I finished work 3 weeks early due to the harvest, he said I've now got to wait to get a job down, you know, down in Portsmouth, down south. I'm heading back towards Kent. He says so at the moment I'm just doing what I'm doing. Anyway, we had a long chat about his history. I never feel nervous to ask because I try and do it in a respectful way. And yeah. I think the fact that people actually, somebody's chatting to him, means that, you know, they're okay and they're interested and they're not going to beat him up or they're not going to spit at him and they're not going to insult him. And I've done this so much. And behind these guys and women's histories, these people are usually very articulate, very knowledgeable, you know, and have got such life stories that they're so fascinating as well.
Okay. Thanks, Donna. When we come back, we're just going to take a break for some music and some adverts now, but when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about your art and your spoken word and the link to charity, because you're doing a lot of fundraising, aren't you, at the moment?
Oh, it's exciting.
Yeah, we want to talk about that. This is Kevin on the Monday Magazine Show, talking to and with Donna Jones, MBE. And Donna, I wanted to finally, and probably briefly, he said with a subtle hint, because we're running out of time, talk about your painting, because you are doing some amazing fundraising through your art, aren't you? Could you tell us about that?
It's to keep me out of trouble since I've come to the island, stop me watching Jeremy Kyle all day. I'm supporting 50 charities through my the sale of my artwork and sculptures, or I'm donating them to charities. I've done 20 so far. If anybody would like me to support a charity, just let Kevin know. Kevin's got my phone number, which he'll read out now, and details.
Yeah, well, well said, Donna. So the contact details for Donna are, you want to email?
Email?
Yeah, Jones291, that's Jones291, lowercase Jones, at btinternet.com. And I will repeat the contact details a bit later in the show for Donna. But what charities, can you mention one or two that you've supported already?
The Motor Neurone Disease, Multiple Sclerosis, Cassis Trust, Friends of the Animals, Cow's Library.
And how does it work? Do they will just contact you and say, we'd like to raise some money and can you give us a painting, please?
Yes.
Is it as simple as that?
It's as simple as that. Word of mouth as well.
How many paintings have you got then?
Oh, I don't tell you.
What, thousands?
A couple of hundred.
Oh, wow. Okay. Oh, well, fantastic idea, though.
Thank you. I love doing it.
It's not just on the island, though. You've done that wherever you've lived, have you?
Well, in Sheffield, I did what they called a painting a day. So I gave away a painting every day for a year.
Wow.
With the intention of making a book. And people were very suspicious. And I said, okay, I'll do you a deal, which is what I used to do with young people.
Yeah.
And it was, if I will let you have a free painting, an original, if you let me take a photograph of you with that painting, and you tell me why you think it's a good idea what I'm doing, and why you specifically chose that painting. And they did.
Wow.
And so they felt that they were giving me something back, and I'm making a book of that.
Fantastic. Oh, it's been an absolute joy talking to you, Donna, and thanks for coming in. I'll give all the details out later in the show, but if you are a charity or you know of a charity, a good cause, Donna's got hundreds of paintings, and all you need to do is get in touch with her, and if you're lucky, she might donate one for you to auction to raise money. So, with that, let's hear some music, and I'll speak to you soon.